Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Real Clear Politics, about a very famous academic educator of the 20th century, now in his 90s, God bless him, Derek Bach. He has a new book. The book has been praised by an article about it and of it in the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is an esteemed site to watch trends in higher education across the country. The book is Attacking the Elites, What Critics Get Wrong and Right About America's Leading Universities. Peter, a very good evening to you. This is written after all of the turmoil at Harvard College in particularly, although other colleges are, and universities are mentioned by Mr. Bach, MIT and the University of Pennsylvania. However, he then moves to use the term elite universities, fill in the blank. And if I understand correctly, he is writing in defense of the decision making by these universities during this time of turmoil. Is that correct? Good evening to you, Peter.
Good evening, John. Yes, generally and for the most part, here and there, he acknowledges missteps, but his overall view is that much of the criticism that's directed at Harvard University and elite universities stems from changes in the larger society and does not really reflect fundamental problems at the university.
The university in question is Harvard College. Let's focus on that, not get too many names involved here. As I understand it, as it's explained, this has to do with changes that Harvard's made these last years in its admissions policy and also the general understanding that the faculty is one side of the ship only, not both sides of the ship. And that is all correct, and Mr. Bach is right to answer it. I did note in reading through his essay and in listening to it being read to me and also in your remarks that his primary experience dealing with student upset is the Vietnam War of the 1960s and 1970s. And I do not recall in the Vietnam War period where that was my college years, there was no attempt to identify a group of American students, your classmates, as part of the problem. I don't remember that sort of aggression being acted out on campus. And so there's nothing really analogous to that. And I'm wondering if Mr. Bach has taken that into account, that what we're not talking just about DEI and admissions and a liberal-sided faculty. We're talking about active abuse of Jewish students and anyone supporting Jewish students on campuses.
Well, John, I think that's an excellent point that you make, this contrast between the Vietnam era and the current era. After all, the fundamental divide during the Vietnam era was between the students and what was called the establishment. University administration was part of the establishment, many professors, but not all the professors, and certainly big business and government. But that was the essential divide, students and the younger generation against the establishment. Today's university specializes in turning students one against the other. It divides students based on race and identity. It places some of them in the category of oppressor. It places, actually these days, the majority paradoxically, in the category of oppressed. And the university has placed itself in the business of awarding benefits and imposing burdens based upon these profoundly divisive categories of oppressor and oppressed. So yes, I agree with you. We are talking about a dramatically different university landscape today.
In addition, the good professor and a college educator uses the word overheated for remarks made in Congress during the now famous, infamous appearance of MIT, Harvard, and the University of Pennsylvania. At the time, I don't remember it being overheated whatsoever. It was an inquiry by a full committee of the Congress, all parties representative. And there was no particular plan to trap anybody. As I recall, the explanation afterwards is that all three college presidents had been very well prepared by attorneys and public relations experts. There was no ambush. Do I recall that correctly, Peter?
I think you recall it entirely correctly. First of all, these are three college presidents. If they're not able to answer direct questions about college governance on the most dramatic issue of the moment, then they're not competent. That's no ambush. Second, it was no surprise that the committees were led by Republicans. Third, as you pointed out, they were prepared by some of the highest priced lawyers in Washington, D.C. It was amazing that three university presidents, Harvard, Penn, MIT, were not able to answer the most basic of questions, whether calling for genocide is compatible. The question wasn't even with the First Amendment, with their own rules about bullying and intimidation. And a follow-up question that really wasn't much asked, but I would have asked, was that would you maintain the same distinction if there were students marching through Harvard Yard demanding the reinstitution of slavery? Would you say it's only when slavery was actually reinstituted that we would regard these policies, these shouts, as inconsistent with our own policies? I'm not now talking about the First Amendment. But we know from university practices how they would have responded. Indeed, at Harvard University, faculty are punished for asserting that there are but two sexes. So they had every opportunity to prepare themselves. There was no ambush. The questions that were put were entirely foreseeable. The failure of the university presidents to answer those questions is entirely on the shoulders of those university presidents. In this case now, two former university presidents.
We've addressed anti-Semitism because it is the poison that is part of this story. But we must also address the other issue that has been debated for quite some time, long prior to the present wars in the Middle East. That is the matter of the one side of the boat having everybody and the other side of the boat having no one, not a balance at all. I believe Mr. Bach acknowledges that that is the case, but he also, in his essay, surprisingly comes up with an explanation that is odd to me. He says that the liberal-minded student, graduate student, will be drawn to academy, where the conservative-minded student or graduate student will not be drawn to the academy. That puzzled me, Peter. How did you read that?
I read that as absurd in one sense, and in a sense that Bach did not intend accurate. The sense in which he did not intend is that all the signs are to undergraduates, even more so to graduate students, that that conservatives and typical conservative interests are not welcome at the university. Actually, someone who is endowed with a conservative sensibility would be drawn to the original, in my view, proper aim of liberal education, one of its original proper aims, which is to preserve the treasures of Western civilization. What is a more central or urgent conservative task? But the university these days, colleges and universities these days, generally, or I should say, often set themselves against that essentially conservative task of liberal education, preserving treasures of Western civilization, when they're not talking about overturning those treasures or denouncing those treasures, they're insisting that all we really need to know has been generated in the last few days or the last few months or the last few years. So a college or a university that was devoted to liberal education, which involves preserving and, yes, very much also enhancing students' ability to think for themselves and expanding, refining students' moral imagination. Such a university, such a liberal education, universities dedicated to such a liberal education would actually be a haven for conservatives.
And the puzzle also extends to the admissions policy. Over these last years, the major dispute in the academy, as I understand it, had to do with racial preferences or tribal presences or silo presences, you know, to come up with a neutral word. And the Supreme Court has been active in that conversation. I think it's been a very successful management of a topic called affirmative action. I don't believe Mr. Bach objects to it in any fashion, and neither do I. But the present admissions policies at universities is not only, to me, non-transparent, it's a mystery now that the Supreme Court has set aside affirmative action. And also, there are other concerns now with other silos. There are so many, I can't name them all. But identity politics is much current in college admissions, as I understand it. Mr. Bach might not know about that. Do you read his essay as informed of these decisions? We're talking about things that I can't even list. There are so many categories.
Well, the farthest that he goes to show that he's familiar is to lament that the Supreme Court has interfered with university polities through its 2023 decision, declaring unlawful Harvard's admissions policies. But Bach shows no awareness in his article, at least. It's not a short article. It's not book length either. But he raises the subject and does not address the abundant findings in the case that Harvard discriminates on the basis of race, does not merely use race as a plus factor, to recall the language of the famous Bakke case from the late 1970s, that Harvard was aggressively and systematically grading down Asian American students, saying they fell short in various categories that measure personality and intangible contributions to the Harvard community, which prevented these Asian American students who had outstanding test scores and outstanding grades from gaining admissions to Harvard, while making special allowances for students who Harvard had designated as coming from historically discriminated against groups. And the Supreme Court found this to be rank, deliberate discrimination based on rank. The evidence Bach does not discuss, and he certainly does not discuss, John, the point you made earlier in our conversation, that a university administration that systematically discriminates based on race, even if its tensions are good, cultivates division within the student body, encourages students to see race or ethnicity as identity, as a central feature about fellow students, rather than taking each individual on his or her own terms and weighing the opinions for what they are, rather than attaching the opinions to skin color or ethnic heritage.
I'm speaking with Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution for his article in Real Clear Politics about a new book, Attacking the Elites, What Critics Get Wrong and Right About America's Leading Universities. When we come back, follow the money. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Paxton.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.